ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय To read this morning from Canto 2, Chapter 9, and Text Number 1. So, Chapter 8. Is entitled Questions by Maharaj Parikshit. Chapter 9 is entitled Answers by citing the Lord's version. The whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam is in the format of questions and answers. It starts, the sages are asking sutta. And then in the second canto, the end of the first canto, Shukadeva arrives. And Maharaj Parikshit then begins asking Shukadeva Goswami questions. In chapter 19 of canto 1. Then the first three chapters are the answer to those two questions. And then chapter 4, he asks some more questions. And those questions become responded to. And chapter 8, he asks a whole lot more questions that constitute the next several cantos. The first of those questions, that chapter 8 begins with his glorifying the process of hearing Krishna Katha. He is a relisher of Krishna Katha. And then he appreciates how Shukadeva Goswami is an expert presenter of the topics of Krishna Katha. So there's the qualification of a speaker. It's a theme in both the first and second canto. The qualification of a speaker, the qualification of a receiver of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the glories of that process. It's important to regularly hear about the importance of Shravanam Kirtanam. Because otherwise, it becomes perhaps taken for granted, or we become complacent. Of course, this part of the world, nobody's complacent, but sometimes complacency sets in. And so it's good to hear what it is that is so transcendentally valuable about what we're doing right now. Because otherwise it becomes ritualistic and okay, now it's time for this and then it's time for that. And we wonder, where's the taste? So part of going beyond the do's and the don'ts and the rituals of sadhana bhakti to go more deeply into the taste of those activities, the purification will better take place or more quickly take place if we have some appreciation of what these topics are and what's going on, what's the science of hearing and chanting, so that our hearts are open, we become better receivers. So the first question, I'll read it. This is chapter 8, and then I'll read the first verse of chapter 9. So after the little Mahima section at the beginning comes, O learned Brahmana. This is text number 7, chapter 8. O learned Brahmana, the transcendental spirit soul is different from the material body. Does he acquire the body accidentally? or by some cause. Will you kindly explain this? For it is known to you. Prabhupada repeats in the purport, how does the process first begin? I can share with you, that's a common question that people ask. It's a logical question to ask. Jiva Goswami, in his Bhakti Sandarbha, he bases a major part of his whole Sandarbha on posing that question and then responding to the question. And his reasoning is, if you know how you got into the material existence to begin with, there gives a very good clue how to get out. Yes? How did we get into this room? There's the door. Okay, that's how to get out. When you want to get out. If you want to stay, you can stay. But if you want to get out, there's the door. That's how we enter. So how did we enter this material condition? Because it's a puzzle. We're a spirit soul, as the translation is specifically presented. We are transcendental. We are different from the material body. A dhatu mataha. We know what dhatu. An adhatu. Without being materially constituted. That's the soul. And now look at this situation. For this little tiny spark of spirit soul in this whole ocean of material energy, just a part of which is this body. And the body is made up of material elements, and the ocean of air and fire and water and earth and sky, it's another ocean. We're bouncing around this ocean. We have nothing to do with the place. How did we get in this situation? So, you know, the fall of the jiva question that people like to ask, and it goes nowhere. So, Prabhupada doesn't spare the opportunity to say, in the process of devotional service, the first step is to take shelter of the spiritual master and then inquire from the spiritual master all about the process. So, as Maharaj Pariksit is doing, Prabhupada is pointing out, and Maharaj Pariksit is not a dummy. Maharaj Pariksit is an elevated personality. Still he's inquiring. He's placing himself in this very submissive and humble mood before Shukadeva Goswami. And by so doing, he achieves perfection, and Shukadeva Goswami achieves perfection. Okay, so would you like to know the answer to that question from the lips of Shukadeva Goswami? With commentary by our acharyas? Okay, here it is. Atmayam rite rajan parashyanu bhavamataha na grite tarta sambandha svapna. You know what svapna is? It's what you do when you do that. You have dreams. Swapna drashtur. Drashtur is drashta. Upa drashta. Drashta is seeing. The seer. It's what we see, seeing yourself in a dream. Now what's that? Another example that's given directly in the Bhagavatam is like a bad dream in which you see your head being cut off. Now, note that the instrument for seeing is in the head, the eyes. So how can you see your head being cut off? Or for that matter, how can you see yourself in a dream? Well, the only way that can happen is some reflection or some dream-like conception, some artificial conception of a representation of reality that's not reality. Because you can't see yourself. But in a dream, you can see yourself. Think about it. You can see yourself sitting there, and there's the, what you're seeing. You're seeing yourself sitting there, seeing something. So, it's possible by the Atmamaya potency of the Lord. O scholars of the first canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, where does this word Atmamaya appear? Hint, Canto 1, Chapter 7. What's the verse? And what's the context? And can you hear him?
Vyasadeva is seeing the Lord.
Vyasadeva is seeing the Lord. Yaya samohito jiva atmanam guna atmanam trigunatmakam. What's the rest? Yiparopi manyate anartam. Is that right? So, you want to explain? But listen, the context is, this is first canto. Now we'll go to the second canto next. The first canto, Vyasadeva is being instructed by Narada why, after compiling all of the Vedas, he's feeling despondency. And the answer is, you haven't sufficiently glorified the personality of Godhead. That's the diagnosis of the problem. So now the remedy of the problem. Fix your mind completely upon the personality of Godhead. And when you have that realization of fixed mind upon the personality of Godhead, you will realize some things. Write about that. The next book that you write should be that. Fixing the mind upon the personality of Godhead, and what do you see? You see the personality of Godhead, but you also see the illusory energy. And the role of the illusory energy is different upon one who has his mind fixed upon the personality of Godhead and the one that doesn't have his mind fixed upon the personality of Godhead. The one that doesn't, yaya sammohita jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. The illusory potency of the Lord has a living entity completely bewildered. Now here, that bewildered is, he's seeing himself like in a dream. What's the relationship between the soul and the body? The verse says there isn't any. Except by the influence of the illusory potency, it appears not only there's a relationship, but it appears that the self is the body. One completely forgets the self, sammohita, not just. Another metaphor is a reflection of an object in the surface of water that's being disturbed by the wind. There's an object. There's a surface of the water, so there's a reflection of the object on the surface of the water. But when there's wind, the water's moving. And when the water's moving, the object, the reflection of the object is also distorted. And similarly, the mind of the conditioned soul, because the mind is one of the 24 elements, or the 8 elements, if you like, from Bhagavad Gita. And when mixing with the other elements, especially desire and hate, raga and dvesha, then even that which you see becomes like the reflection on the surface of the water that's moved by the wind. It becomes distorted. Besides, it's illusion. It's not the real thing. It's a distorted illusion. It's not only in a dream you see yourself, but then you may see yourself sitting on the throne, a king. Then you're happy. And then in comes a tiger charging at the throne. And there's fear. So that's the water that's moved by wind. And so the reflection becomes distorted. But there, just even if it's not distorted, it's just a reflection, then it gets distorted. The problem is because we've withdrawn our attention from Krishna. And when that happens, the illusory potency kicks in. And we start identifying with the material energy instead of who we are. Follow? The logic of it is easy enough to follow. The problem comes when, you know, we're caught in that bewildered state and trying to like scratch our heads and figure it out. And you can't figure it out. Because you use that same instrument, the mind, to figure it out, and you just go round and around and around and around and around and around and around, and you don't get anywhere. You can't figure it out. Therefore, in the process of devotional service, the first step is to take shelter of the spiritual master and then inquire from the spiritual master all about the process. Very simple. It's descending knowledge instead of ascending knowledge, in other words. And then it works. Then you're not figuring it out, but you can then understand what the nature of illusion is and the way to get out. Like, how do we get in here in this illusory state, and how do we get out? A simple example, a classic example, someone that's in the bottom of a well. When you're in the bottom of a well, how do you get out? Do you scratch your head and ask yourself, how did I get here? And you see some light up there, but you can't climb up the wall of a well. But if someone comes to the top of the well and says, hey buddy, I'm lowering a rope down that well, grab on, okay? Well, wait a minute, how did I get here? Don't worry about that. Just grab hold of the rope. And all you have to do is just hold the rope. I'll pull you out. Just hold the rope. Yeah, but, you know, how do I know the rope is going to get me out of here? Etc. I'm tired. I'm hungry. Yeah, I know you're tired now. So grab a hold of the rope. Come on. So, here's the translation. The focus is going to go on this term, Atma Maya. In this case, atvamaya is meaning the illusory potency. O King, Shukadeva Goswami said, unless one is influenced by the energy, put the adjective, illusory energy, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no meaning to the relationship of the pure soul and pure consciousness with the material body. There's no meaning at all. That relationship is just like a dreamer's seeing his own body working. Purport. Maharaj Parikshit's question as to how a living entity began his material life, although he is apart from the material body and mind, is perfectly answered. The spirit soul is distinct from the material conception of life, but he is absorbed in such a material conception because of being influenced by the external energy of the Lord. That's what Vyasadeva saw. So he taught that. Shukadeva Goswami is now explaining it. So that illusory energy, external energy of the Lord, is called Atmamaya. This has already been explained in the first canto in connection with Vyasadeva's realization of the Supreme Lord and his external energy. This is important. The external energy is controlled by the Lord. Right? Maya Jakshina Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. How is it controlled? By the will of the Lord. He doesn't have gears and levers and, you know, breakdowns, and then has to go fix the breakdown. Everything's happening by his will. What's that verse that the Prabhupada often quotes of how the energies of the Lord are moving? He has multifarious potencies and they're all acting by his will. Parasha Shakti Devadaiva Shruyate Swabhaviki Jnana Balakriyacha. So he has unlimited diverse potencies and all are acting by his will. Therefore, although the living entity is purely conscious in his pure state, he is subordinate to the will of the Lord in being influenced by the external energy of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita 15:15 also, the same thing is confirmed. What's that? The Lord is present within the heart of every living entity, and all the living entities' consciousness and forgetfulness are influenced by the Lord. What's the verse? Sarvasya chaham. Let's start with the beginning. Now, that's paragraph one, but paragraph two gets even more interesting. Because Prabhupada is going to ask and then answer the question, why? We got the answer, how? And what? But now is why? Now the next question automatically made will be, why the Lord influences the living entity to such consciousness and forgetfulness? The answer is, the Lord clearly wishes that every living entity be in his pure consciousness as part and parcel of the Lord, and thus be engaged in the loving service of the Lord as he is constitutionally made. But because the living entity is partially independent also, he may not be willing to serve the Lord, but may try to become as independent as the Lord is. There's the problem. All the non-devotee living entities are desirous of becoming equally as powerful as the Lord, although they are not fit to become so. The living entities are illusioned by the will of the Lord because they wanted to become like Him. This is a metaphor. Like a person who thinks of becoming a king without possessing the necessary qualifications. When the living entity desires to become the Lord Himself, he is put in a condition of dreaming that he is a king. So now he restates it with finer detail. Therefore, the first sinful will of the living entity is, this is the doorway to get into the material world. The first sinful will of the living entity is to become the Lord. That's in the numbering process, that's number one. Then number two. And the consequent will of the Lord is that the living entity forget his factual life and thus dream of the land of utopia where he may become one like the Lord. Things cannot happen without the Lord's sanction. What does the Lord want? He doesn't want this. But the living entity wants this. The living entity has free will. He doesn't interfere with the will of the living entity. So he provides. But for that to happen, it's a twofold process, or two-step process. First is you have to forget. And then you have to be covered by a misconception. And to get out, there's language in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that's our postgraduate study, where the specific languages of that twofold covering, avaranatmika shakti and prapikshatmika shakti, one is the throwing potency and the other is the covering potency. It's the same. Forget who you are and accept a mistaken identity. So the struggle is not only to get out of the mistaken identity, it's then to accept who we are. It's a double lock on the prison door. Even if you get theoretically the concept down that says, okay, I'm spirit soul. Got it. Still this rebellious propensity, spirit is there. So we stay in jail. We try to be devotees, but we got this conception that I should be the enjoyer rather than Krishna should be the enjoyer. And it's deep. Oh, very deep. I had a very nice experience, one visit in one place. I was told the audience is going to be new people, someone in their home, they invited all their friends don't know anything about Krishna consciousness, so can you present something that's really simple so that very, very new people can understand. So, okay. I warned them, don't be surprised. How many people said they would come? And he gave the number and I said, don't be surprised if the following happens. Half the people that promised you that they'll come won't come at all. And those people that promised you and do come, they'll come late. In time for prasadam. Don't be surprised. No, they'll come. Okay. Sure enough, when the program began, none of them were there. Regulars were there. So I prepared this, introduction to Krishna consciousness. So instead there were a bunch of children there, so I just had the children, okay, you sit in front, the class will be for you guys. So that the adults could understand, vicariously through their children, stuff that they actually don't understand. And then the people that came late, they, you know, they got their Krishna consciousness 101. So here's what I asked. Let's see if you want to respond to this one. Consider or imagine a spirit soul that has been wandering lifetime after lifetime after lifetime in search of happiness. They've been in this species, they've been in that species, they've been in this culture, they've been in that culture, this form of life, that form of life, and they get to the point in this human form of life thinking, this program isn't working out. Something's fundamentally flawed here. I think I want to go back to Krishna. I've heard about Krishna, and I have some deep inside me, some faith that Krishna is where I want to be. I want to be with Krishna. So, you try to do a U-turn. And it just doesn't happen so easily. It just should happen so easily. Krishna's inviting us, and Krishna loves us, and you know, we want to go to Krishna, so just do a U-turn and go to Krishna. But it doesn't happen so easily. Why? The kids came up with some fantastic answers. And chief of them, they're mostly boys, and then there was one girl. She, you know, waited patiently for the aggressive boys to calm down a little bit. She just raised her hand and said, the soul says yes, but the senses say, I want sense gratification. You know, like a 6-7-year-old girl. And then another one of the boys raised his hand and said, and the mind says, I don't want to give up my independence. I said, you got the essence. The soul says yes. But there's this conditioning influence, the mind and the senses. Senses are habituated to sense gratification. So we value our experience in Krishna consciousness and of neophyte stage in terms of sense gratification and how much pinch there is on our sense of independence that the mind wishes to sustain and secure. But that's not. That's the mirror image. It's not the real object. It's not who we are. But that conditioning strongly continues. And that the message that Srimad Bhagavatam would like us to receive, so please receive it, is that's illusion. And it's by the influence of the illusory potency that one thinks that way. So, what's the connection between the soul that's transcendental and the body that's made of material elements? There is no relationship other than illusory one. And that illusory one is because it starts with a living entity. The first sinful will of the living entity is to become the Lord. Step number two. The consequent will of the Lord is that the living entity forget his factual life and thus dream of the land of utopia where he may become one like the Lord. So the blame doesn't go to Krishna. How? Because it's phrased in a different way. It's phrased, if God is all good and God is all powerful, why did he create a place where people suffer? It's varieties on the theme, but that's the nature of the question. So another variety is, why is it that people that are religious sometimes have to undergo so much suffering when people that are irreligious, they seem to be enjoying like anything. It's the same question stated in a different way. You know, God is arbitrary, and he just kind of blows it. You know, he's all powerful, he's all good, and he makes places where people suffer. Why did he make that mistake? He didn't make a mistake. We made the mistake. We desired, he said, you really don't. I want. You really don't. I want. All right. But, you know, I'm telling you, you don't want it. Because there is no such thing as being God or enjoying independently of God. It just doesn't exist. And to have that, you have to have illusion. But even before illusion, you have to forget who you really are. You have this double bind. I want it. All right. And another part of the double bind is what the second canto Bhagavatam speaks about profusely. Is while in that illusory condition, we take false shelters. The language of the Bhagavatam is fallible soldiers. They're going to protect us. Ha! Not so. It's all an illusion. It's all the illusory energy. It has nothing to do with who we really are. And we just go on in la-la land, you know, making our way and just like dreaming the dream, like we don't want to wake up because it's you know, that's all we know is dreaming. When someone's shaking us saying, wake up, you're dreaming. Whether you're sitting on the throne or being chased by a tiger, you're dreaming. So, to illustrate how the Lord responds to the living entity that wants to become God and enjoy independently from Him, He gives an example. The child cries to have the moon from the mother, and the mother gives the child the mirror to satisfy the crying and disturbing child. Disturbed child. With the reflection of the moon. Similarly, the crying child of the Lord is given over to the reflection, the material world, to lord it over as karmi. And thus, give this up in frustration to become one with the Lord. Both these stages, that's karmi and jnani, are dreaming illusions only. There is no necessity. I've underlined this one. There is no necessity of tracing out the history of when the living entity desired this, because that's another one. You know, people drill down to say, "Well, come on, we're in this great place, and we're going along having lots of fun, and then all of a sudden, this other thing starts to happen that says, 'I don't want to have all this fun. I want to be God.' If it's factually so much fun, then why would we want to become God? Why would we make this, you know, free will choice that if people get into it?" Prabhupada's statement: there is no necessity of tracing out the history of when the living entity desired this. But the fact is that as soon as he desired it, he was put under the control of Atmamaya by the direction of the Lord. Therefore, in the sequence, this is number 3. Therefore, the living entity in his material condition is dreaming falsely that this is mine and this is I. So that's the part that's where we are. Scratching our heads saying, how did we get here? But we want to do this U-turn, but it's not happening. So, the knowledge of the process of devotional service includes, this is the first question he's asking, in the 8th chapter, anyway. And how do we get in this condition? Because it gives us a clue how to get out. Well, rebellious. Krishna takes away our remembrance of our real identity and covers us with a false identity. And then the third is, we go zooming down the path of life, thinking this is I and this is mine. Aham mameti. The dream is that the conditioned soul thinks of his material body as I, or falsely thinks that he is the Lord, and that everything in connection with this material body is mine. Thus, only in dream does the misconception of I and mine persist life after life. This continues life after life. As long as the living entity is not purely conscious of his identity as the subordinate part and parcel of the Lord. That was paragraph number two. Paragraph number three is very short. Summary. Paragraph three. In his pure consciousness, however, there is no such misconceived dream. And in that pure conscious state, the living entity does not forget that he is never the Lord. But, that's the negative, here's the positive. He is eternally the servant of the Lord in transcendental love. End of paragraph, end of purport. So that's like, you know, State of the Union. A little progress report of the living entity caught in illusion. How did it happen? So the question isn't how did it happen. That's not where it starts. It starts, what's the relationship between this transcendental spirit soul and the covering? And the answer is there isn't one, except an illusory one. So then, why? Living entity desired it. Oh, come on. Well, we desired illusion. We desired that which is not possible. And so, in order to fulfill that which is not possible, we have this little illusion place to try to fulfill a desire that's not possible. Krishna didn't say no. And some people say that too. Why didn't Krishna just say no? You know, they elaborate. A loving parent sometimes says to their child, no. Krishna is a loving father. Why didn't he just say no? He did say no. he said, I don't advise this. The scriptures are filled with it, right? Please don't do this. Come over here. Just like a parent to a child. But the child has will. And a loving parent does not, and for that matter even cannot. Krishna, is there something that Krishna cannot do? Krishna could do. But then if Krishna did, then there wouldn't be love. Because love is voluntary. It wouldn't, then if you have, what's love that's not voluntary? It's not love, it's something other. But there is love, but it's voluntary. So there's free will. And with the free will, Krishna is advising, no. We're saying, yes. I want to enjoy. There's no enjoyment. I want to enjoy. You'll suffer. I want to enjoy. Like little spoiled kids. All right, so you can learn your lesson the hard way. I'll stay with you through the whole experience, whatever species of life you go into a worm and stool, I'll stay with you. Krishna's that loving, but he doesn't interfere with our free will. But he prompts our free will in so many ways, through the external energy and through the internal energy. He prompts. He wants us to return to him. That's what he wants. And we're the rebellious person. So that's the why. 1, 2, and 3. And then the when, don't ask the question. Here's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says about not asking that question. It's in a famous book, little booklet, that in 1896, the same birth year as Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivinoda Thakur printed and sent to universities all around the world the life and precepts of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In that little booklet, it addresses this very question. Because there's, in the precepts section, Bhaktivinoda Thakur presents Dasa Mula Tattva. You all know what that is? The 10 essential teachings that Lord Chaitanya gave. It's like a, kind of like a catechism or a something that Bhaktivinoda Thakur derived by his spiritual intelligence. And it appeared again and again and again and again. It's a system of looking at Lord Chaitanya's teachings with 10 essential elements. And one of them is the living entity, is each a fragmental part of the Supreme. Another one is some living entities are conditioned, some living entities are liberated. So in that section he describes living entities that are conditioned. And he presents as follows. Do not ask the misleading question when the living entity was created. Because when you say created, it sounds like once upon a time, the living entity wasn't there. Just like, you know, creating this building. Once upon a time, this building wasn't here. And then some architects and engineers and builders, and then the building was created. Then after some time, the building will be demolished. So there was a time when the building didn't exist and then it was created. So when the language that says the living entity is an emanation from the personality of Godhead, it sounds like once upon a time it was just the personality of Godhead. He was hanging out, feeling lonely, and thought, gee, I'd like to have some companions. So let's just expand a bunch of living entities. But there's, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, don't ask the misleading question, when were living entities created? Likewise, don't ask the misleading question, when living entities were enthralled? Because it's an event, but it's not an event within time. And there are different types of events that are not within time. This goes into, you have Bhagavad Gita here? I'm going to end shortly, so be ready. Chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita. There's a word used in chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita, to describe this very same subject. The word is anadi. Adi means beginning. Anadi means without beginning. There are two ways of looking at without beginning. Absolutely without beginning. And like Krishna, anadir, adir, govinda, that's one conception of anadi. And then another is the conception of the living entity being enthralled. And the way the Prabhupada describes it is that you cannot go back in time and 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 back in time. And there's where it began. Because in the spiritual world we don't have what is time is conspicuous by its absence. You've heard that phrase before? Something is conspicuous by its absence. Like, you know, here's an assembly and somebody is conspicuous by their absence. We're accustomed to having a certain somebody and their absence is conspicuous, or they're conspicuous by their absence. So time is conspicuous by its absence. Notice of conspicuous. It's very obvious that in the spiritual world, time is absent. So how do you, if time is absent, how do you have events? Because we only know events within time. Like, you know, we're seated here, and before we were seated here, we were doing something else. And after some time passes, we'll be doing something else besides sitting here. We know events within time. What are those events that are not within our knowable frame of time? Those are anadi events. They're events. The living entity misused his free will. When did he misuse his free will? It's an anadi event. Try to trace it out. The advice is don't try to trace it out. Because if you try to trace it out, you won't find. You have back and back and back and back and back. So, therefore, Prabhupada writes, don't try to trace it out. When did the living entity come into this material condition? There is no necessity of tracing out the history of when the living entity desired this. And this is in text 20 of chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita. Prakatim purusham chaiva vidhi anadi ubhavapi. So anadi is without beginning. Adi means beginning. And anadi is without beginning. So here's what Prabhupada writes in the purport. The living entities are also in him, and because they are conditioned, they revert Supreme Lord. Thus they are not allowed to enter the spiritual sky. But with the coming forth of the material nature, these living entities are again given a chance to act in the material world and prepare themselves to enter into the spiritual world. That is the mystery of this material creation. Actually, the living entity is originally the spiritual part and parcel of the Lord, but due to his rebellious nature, he is conditioned within material nature. Listen, it really does not matter how the living entities or the superior entities of the Supreme Lord have come in contact with material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead knows, however, how and why this actually took place. In the scriptures, the Lord says that those attracted by this material nature are undergoing a hard struggle for existence, but we should know that with certainty from the descriptions of these few verses that all transformations and influences of the material nature by the three modes are all productions of material nature. So, we're getting, you know, a very unified worldview here. Krishna knows, and Prabhupada has also said elsewhere that when we come to that position where we're again with Krishna, we'll also know. But in this position, the instrument of the mind with which we're trying to know will never allow us to know, so don't try. It's an anadi event. To be continued. Any discussion? Yes.
In the open state of Krishna consciousness, the value that we have for the process is based on our self-gratification.
That's our conditioning. We hold it up to that lens. How much sense gratification am I getting? How pleased am I becoming? And if it's a struggle, there's something wrong.
So, being in that absorption, how can we be progressive?
How does a person who is diseased understand that the medicine that he's taking is going to help him overcome the disease? It's some confidence in the physician. The physician's a good physician. I've seen. The physician has cured so many patients. He has good medicine. He certainly had good diagnosis when he took my pulse. He knows exactly what's going on. So I have faith in the physician. I'll continue taking the medicine so I can get up on the other side of this disease. Even I know that the part of my disease is I'm looking at the cure. You know, how much do I like the medicine? How much do I like the diet? How much do I like the physician? Because it's all about me in material consciousness. So I know that that's my disease, and so I'm going to not pay attention to that voice that's coming from the mind that's dictating, come on, sense gratification. It's a secret he doesn't want you to hear. How do we get out of lust?
The soul is desiring to get out, but what is this?
It's contact with the mode of passion. The mode of passion says, it's kamesha, krodesha, but even before the kamesha, it's rajoguna, some udbhava. Not only bhava, but udbhava. So the mode of passion says, enjoy. Come on and enjoy. You go, yeah, I want to enjoy. And it's the two things have to happen. What real enjoyment has to be abandoned, and the covering of the illusory conception of enjoyment has to be accepted. But once we're in the trap, the mode of passion keeps that going. Come on and enjoy. We're suffering like anything. Come on and enjoy. Try it this way. All you need is a little more. It's a mode of passion. They shouldn't have it, you should have it. Mode of passion. And then jealousy and anger and lust, greed, illusion. So, you know, the mode of passion doesn't touch a transcendentalist. A transcendentalist can be in the midst of a most passionate scene and is completely aloof. Because they have only one desire. serve Krishna. So the medicine is the serve Krishna medicine, but that along with the serve Krishna medicine, there's some regulation of the senses, and you know, frame life in the quality of goodness, like very clean, very regulated, very truthful, and so on. We frame our life in the quality of goodness, and sustain the life of that quality by submission unto Krishna, that Krishna should be pleased. And we can check ourselves how much in the mode of passion are we by asking oneself the question, is my spirit, is my mood to see that Krishna is pleased? Even something is good. Is my mood to please Krishna? Am I doing this cleaning or being regulated or speaking the truth so that Krishna is pleased or so that I'm pleased and feeling a contentment, oh, to see I'm very clean, I'm very truthful, I'm very compassionate. Just, I know that other good people are noticing, there's just not too many good people around. And we become conditioned by a sense of happiness, says right in Bhagavad Gita, in the mode of goodness. And so the antidote for that conditioning to a sense of happiness, and everybody, we all know what that happiness is. When you do something that's an act of kindness to another, you feel something. It's the mode of goodness. It's not transcendence. That Krishna should be pleased. And that's the standard. And that there is protection from the modes of nature, because we take shelter of Krishna in the mood of serving Him. The mode of goodness is meant to lead us to good, to transcendence. The striving for transcendence is enhanced and enriched by goodness, but it's not dependent upon it. Bhakti is independent. And following behind it, the mode of goodness characteristics will come. So we do both. Follow goodness, we follow the regular principles, and we chant Hare Krishna. Something else?
Maharaj, hearing this is very nice, but when try to apply the same thing, so remember these things, which are really nice.
Well, Krishna, how to remember? Krishna gives remembrance. Right? We recited the verse. Matak smritir gyanam apohanam cha. So Krishna will give remembrance if you want remembrance, or if you want Krishna. So it's a cultivation. Because we want Krishna. This point that you're raising is another classic. You know, we had this discussion two other places I was recently. It got down to, it's actually very easy. Krishna makes it really easy. He gives so many ways that we can think of Him. Arjuna asks and Krishna gives so many ways. Even, you know, just have mundane vision. But see something spectacular in this world as a spark of Krishna's splendor. You know, taste water. Ah, Krishna. That capacity to quench thirst is Krishna. The light of the sun in the way. We have opportunities all the time to be Krishna conscious. But we're attached to other things. We're attached to our garbage. We want to take a big sack of garbage with us into the spiritual world. There's somebody standing at the gate saying, no, no. Garbage stays outside. Shoes stay outside. Garbage stays outside. Your dirty laundry stays outside. But we're attached. Where does our... When you sit down, you put your hand in your bead bag, and you start chanting the Maha Mantra, where does the mind go? And that tells where your attachments are. Now, there are services that we have to do also. That's attachment to Krishna. But when we're chanting Krishna's holy name, we should just be attentive to Krishna. And Krishna will help us. He'll give us the knowledge how to do that service nicely. We don't have to multi-process how to do our service when we're chanting. So it's, you know, how strong is our desire? So we have the means, the practices to strengthen that desire. And when we do those practices, that's where our attention should be going, to the essence, to reverse this, you know, being the Lord propensity, being the controller of all I survey. Ishwaroham hom bogi. Bhalavat. Anyway. So it's gradual. It's how to, you follow the process and stay situated very carefully in contemplating what it is that we're doing. Don't just be a mindless performer of activity, because that will lead to complacency. Why do I need this activity? I'm not getting any taste in it anyways. Etc. Or, oh, it's a burden. I made this vow, I have to chant 16 rounds, and I have to do this worship, and gee. It becomes tedious. So stay in that position, that space, where one is contemplating. But by regular hearing, it helps. And as I mentioned at the very beginning, recognizing what it is that hearing and chanting is meant to accomplish. What's the goal? And why is it so effective? So by regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, it becomes part of how you view the world, how you view yourself, how you view the process of devotion. Regularly hearing helps establish that consciousness. Doing that in the association of nice devotees like this. That's the how-to. And let go of the other stuff, the garbage, the anartha, the unwanted things. Letting go is a big, big item. Recognizing and then letting go, taking shelter of Krishna. Anything else? Yes? Yeah.
So is it more important to try to stick to the instruction rather than worry about whether I've been conditioned?
Is it more important to do what than wonder, am I? We should assume that we're conditioned. That's a reasonable assumption.
Is it more important to focus on fulfilling the instructions?
Yes. 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 For the process of anartha nivritti, primary attention should go upon the shelter or the process of bhajana kriya. On the strength of bhajana kriya, anartha nivritti will follow. Yes. And as we go along and more practiced and accomplished and maybe a little more effective, at Bhajana Kriya, we can then pay particular attention to this anartha and that anartha. But it's our attention should not go away from the Bhajana Kriya and become anartha nivritti conscious, but we should be Krishna conscious. And the strength of Krishna consciousness address this or that anartha. Keep first things first, and second things second. Don't switch the order. Switching the order is our tendency for doership. I'm going to address this anartha. Get out my bazooka and blast it away. Rambo. Macho. No, stay fixed upon the very source where spiritual strength is coming, from our hearing and chanting, from the teachings, from the teachers, from the process of sadhana bhakti. Stay fixed there. That will give you the strength to go beyond the anarthas. And on that strength you address the anarthas, not abandon the sources of strength and go work on the anarthas now that I understand what they are and that they're bad, I should get rid of them. Stay in a receiving mode, avoid the doer mode. Another way of saying it in a simple fashion. As servants, we have something to do. And a big part of that something to do is receive. And then carry out. This actually could become an instrument of that instruction. That's all. Nimitta matram bhavya savya sachi. Anything else? Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai.